Tonight's session of the House Subcommittee on Workforce Development to order. And thank you all for coming this morning. We're going to be having a public hearing on House Bill 2204, and I'm going to open that public hearing. And Kevin, if you would please give us a brief summary of what that bill does.
Thank you, Representative Chairman Witt, members of the committee. This is HB 2204, which is a measure that would remove from the Employment Department the Jobs Plus component from the Employment Department. It also repeals two statutes. And finally provides that the unexpected balance remaining in the Oregon Jobs Plus Employment Wage Fund, which I believe there is a small amount, on the effective date of the Act actually refers to the general fund. This has a subsequent referral to Ways and Means, and at this point we do not have the fiscal statements at this time.
Okay, fine. Thank you very much. Keith, I apologize. I usually try and check in before I gavel in. You're okay this morning? Okay, sounds good. With that, I'm going to call forward, please, Tom Barley. That's okay. That's fine. Good morning, Tom. Your first appearance this year before our committee. Welcome.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tom Barley. I'm the Unemployment Insurance Division Administrator for the Employment Department. I'm here before you today with, to offer some brief testimony on House Bill 2204, which is basically a housekeeping measure that would take the references and the statutes out of our chapter on the Jobs Plus program. Excuse me while I get my glasses.
Sure.
As you probably know, the Jobs Plus program has two versions. One's administered by the Department of Human Services, and then there was one that was administered by the Employment Department for unemployment insurance beneficiaries. There's still a Jobs Plus Advisory Board housed in the Department of Human Services that is now solely responsible for their side of the program. We haven't had any activity or authority in our statute since the expiration of the 2003-05 biennium. So the program basically hasn't been in operation since then. We would like to have the statutes cleaned up, which would allow us to turn back the balance in the Jobs Plus Unemployment Wage Fund and move it to the general fund. That balance, as you'll see in my testimony, stands at $319,310. So if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them.
Thank you very much. Tom, just for the before we actually get into questions or comments by the committee, just by way of a background, would you explain the fact that Jobs Plus, there's your component, there's another agency's component, I believe, which I don't expect you to necessarily be an expert on, but I think that background would be helpful, and maybe why you're asking for that program to go away. In other words, that it's non-operational, whatever. That background may be helpful.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure I know the total background of why it's not operational, other than it hasn't been reauthorized by the legislature.
Okay.
So I'm not really prepared to respond to that question.
Thank you. And there, your agency is not the only agency that as a Jobs Plus component.
That's correct. As I stated earlier, the Department of Human Services still has a Jobs Plus program in operation for TANF recipients.
Okay.
Our program was targeted at unemployment insurance beneficiaries. We would look for them to get some jobs, refer them to a job, and there would be a subsidy paid to the employer to help with the wages during the training period for that job.
Great. Thank you very much. Questions or comments from the committee members? Yes, Vice Chair Huffman, please.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Is there another program that's taken the Jobs Plus program that the Employment Department is actively working with?
Chairman Witt, Vice Chair Huffman, there is no program currently in place. We do have other training programs for unemployment insurance beneficiaries, and we do jobs placement focus for unemployment insurance claimants. We work real closely with them to get them registered in our IMAT skills system to get them referred to jobs. We are working with Senate Commerce on some legislation that would produce some additional training areas for economic disadvantaged claims. We're calling them to get them into OJT on the job training programs, but currently there is no program per se that replaces Jobs Plus.
Is there a reason why the current funding went away for it, but I'm just kind of curious why we have a $300,000+ balance and why that wasn't continued to be used up on the program?
If you have knowledge. Vice Chairman Huffman, from what I understand, the funds were in that fund to pay for training or to pay the subsidies, and they had to be in up until September 30 to make sure there weren't any carryovers, if you will, when the program ended on June 30. And there needed to be a sufficient amount of money to make sure we could cover all requests for reimbursement. As it turned out, we had a little bit of a surplus that we would turn back if this statute was eliminated. Does that address your question adequately?
Yes. Do we have an additional comment on that?
Mr. Chair, we have some additional information.
Big breaking news.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Huffman, for the record, my name is Rebecca Nance, and I'm the legislative manager with the Employment Department. I did some further digging. Mr. Byerly was away from the office last evening, and it turns out that there was about $3 million at one point, and the legislature redirected some of those funds back into the general fund. I believe that was during the 2002-2003 time frame. I don't have that right at my fingertips. I can certainly get that to Mr. Christensen. And that left about, there was about $250,000 left over in the fund after they swept it through. I think it was $2.5-3 million roughly, and I can get that information for you. I do have that back at the office because I did that digging last evening. And so there was $250,000, and the balance between the $250,000 and the $319,000 roughly is interest that that earned from just sitting in the account. We have no way of accessing that.
Representative Esquivel, and then Representative Dembro.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I am familiar with this program. I've utilized it in the past. I was a manager in two counties, and I hired some people through the Employment Department, and I believe at that time, to explain to everyone, we would hire the individual, no questions asked, and you could dismiss them with no questions at all. For a period of 6 months, I believe, the Employment Department itself was paying for half their wages, and it was the training of on-the-job training. Today, in Josephine County, we have a title examiner that makes $40,000+ a year due to this program. The striking difference, I thought, which was interesting, and this was prior to the fund being raided in the 2001-2003 sessions area through that time of crisis, was that Josephine County advocated this program very much, but Jackson County did not. There was very much inconsistency with the Employment Department, and therefore it was never successful in Jackson County. But it was very successful, I thought, in Josephine County. Great program. You go to the Employment Department to find someone to employ. I would never have thought of going to DHS. And why we unfunded this, did not refund it, I do not know. But there's no sense in having a program if you're not going to fund it. So, and it's too bad because it's a great program, and it was a good segue into the Employment Department and a good avenue to get people to work in this state that right now we face some substantial deficits on employment. So I hate to see this thing go away, but if we aren't going to fund it, if we aren't going to take the responsibility as legislators to fund it, then I guess it should go away. But it's just a tragedy.
And thank you, Representative Esquivel. And to his point, I'm aware that there are a number of parties, both the Employment Department and some other parties of interest, that are coming forward with legislation dealing with a training program, and it might be helpful. Before I recognize Representative Dembrow, if you could possibly enlighten us on the LC draft that you all have, and I think it may speak to those of us who are interested in training.
Mr. Chair, I have to confess I didn't come prepared to bring the LC with me, but I will speak to what I know about it from my recollection in reviewing it. The LC 20... And I guess the number's not important. 2239, I think, is the number.
2439 was 2439. Was the
I got close.
Was
thank
the
you.
Note that I had, yeah.
That LC is somewhat modeled after a concept that came through a committee you chaired last session, where we would reach out to economically disadvantaged workers, in other words, workers that made 110% of the current minimum wage or less, and would seek to put them in various kinds of training, from classroom training onto on-the-job training. This LC goes back to use that concept to reach out to those workers, because we already do reach out for training to dislocated workers in Oregon. But let's face it, there are a lot of lower-income workers that would like to advance in the job world and just simply cannot, and they're not dislocated. They're just economically disadvantaged, for lack of a better term. And so this would all give them the opportunity, should they become unemployed, to obtain some training, some literacy skills, some computer skills, any kinds of basic training, right up through and including on-the-job training, where we would actually allow them to claim some unemployment insurance benefits while they're in training. And it would allow the employer to negotiate in the training plan. Maybe they wouldn't pay them the full-scale wage. They would pay somebody who was fully competent in that job, but a reduced amount that would then be subsidized with an unemployment insurance benefit check. So they would get income from two places, plus they would be able to get some additional training and learn a new job skill, and we would allow them to do that for the 26 weeks of their unemployment insurance claim. That's roughly in a nutshell what the concept is aiming to do.
Thank you very much. Representative Dembrow.
Well, actually, Chair Witt, you took my question.
Okay.
But I wanted to say, first of all, that I think we should start a practice that whenever anyone comes to testify handing money back, we should have a halo descend from the ceiling, and because it's going to be really sought after this session. I'm intrigued by this notion that you're talking about. I do believe that as we're going through this economic crisis, we need to look not only at the unemployed but the underemployed, particularly those who've been chronically underemployed. So, you know, I look forward to seeing the details of that plan, but that seems, you know, in concept, like a positive use for the dollars.
Vice Chair Huffman.
Thank you, Chair Witt. I just want to say that, kind of along the lines of Representative Esquivel, that I'm at least glad to hear that there's going to be a replacement program. It's disappointing that we allowed a program to fall by the wayside or unfund it for whatever reasons. I wasn't here in 05 and don't know the particulars, but at least it sounds like there's an up-and-coming program that would be a good replacement for it, and I would hope, and I'll be honest, and it's probably differs from region to region, just like Sal was talking about the difference between the counties and probably the department offices and whatnot. In my particular area, as an employer for almost 25 years, during this era of the mid-90s through 2003 or so, Jobs Plus really wasn't overtly promoted to me as an employer as a possibility to bring new and somewhat challenged people financially in and get them up in the ranks of... So hopefully this new program will be a program that is marketed well in each of our districts and trying to help the people that it's going to be targeted for, assuming that we can get the support of the balance of the legislature to actually move this along and fund it. And I was going to say to Representative Dembrow that maybe the halo should only come down partway right now, because you're giving $300,000 back, but you're going to come back with an ask for a new program. So.
Most people are just asking.
That's true. Chair Whip, Vice Chair Huffman, you nailed me there on that one. We will be asking for some funding to get that other program through. And in concept, the training program did go through this committee last session. It ran into a little bit of rough waters towards the end of the session when it came to the fiscal impact. It sometimes can be kind of expensive to put people through training and find the funding for them. So we're hoping we have a little bit more of a streamlined, less administratively costly, and less costly to administer program this time.
Representative Esquivel.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. That's what was so good about the other program, is that the employer took the responsibility to train the individual. And that's what made it so appealing as an employer, because personally, I always felt I would rather have someone that I can train than have someone come in with bad habits already. And that's what made that program, in my opinion, very successful, at least as a tool to me as an employer.
And I think what I'm hearing is that with the new bill, we'll anticipate the opportunity for folks to come in and receive training, either in the classroom or with the employer, and even do on-the-job training.
Yes, Chair, we'd actually all of the above.
Okay.
I mean, we would love for somebody to get an on-the-job training opportunity that maybe they could take an afternoon a week or an evening a week, and even get some classroom training if they needed to work a particular machine or a particular computer or learn a particular skill set of some kind. Just as long as the employer was willing to let them go to that class, we would try to find a way to help fund that. And again, we would help the employer with the wages by allowing some unemployment insurance benefits each week they're in training.
Well, I think that's headed precisely in the direction that our committee has heard a lot of testimony. We've heard from employers repeatedly. We've heard from representatives of organized labor. We've heard from other folks in various levels of government that we're facing a critical shortage of employees that are adequately trained for the specific job to which they're applying, and that employers are facing an overwhelming difficulty in filling the pipeline with folks with the necessary skills. So I think this is one avenue that will be available to begin filling that pipeline. So I'm glad to hear about that. Before I recognize Representative Holvey, can you tell me, I know certainly you don't schedule bills around here, but can you give me any inside information that you might have as to when the LC will become a bill and where it might be headed? Do you know that?
What I know is that it's a Senate Commerce Bill, committee bill.
Okay.
It, I believe, had first reading yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and it has a bill number. I just haven't been informed what that bill number is. Maybe Rebecca maybe has more than that.
Thank you, Chair Whip, members of the committee. Actually, I found out that there's a bill number, but it hasn't yet been read across.
I see. Okay.
However, a hearing is scheduled on the 18th of February in the other body.
Okay.
And a subsequent hearing, if needed, is scheduled on the 23rd.
Very good. Thank you. That's very helpful to me, and I'll tell you, that'll become evident here in a little bit. Representative Holvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And perhaps more of a comment than a question. I have sat through discussions around the Jobs Plus program, and this new LC concept sounds like it has a slightly different focus that may be more successful than what I understand the Jobs Plus program was. And one of the key differences that I remember is that in a lot of areas, the Jobs Plus program really wasn't aimed at training in as much for outcomes as opposed to it was being used to basically subsidize job positions for certain employers, and was so it was very disconnected to training the workforce and disconnected to many employers who weren't able to participate in it, and gave some employers a handout or as such. And this new LC draft seems like it's going to be focused on not the employer but the unemployed or the economically disadvantaged people, and providing those training opportunities which will make them more employable. And I think that's the right direction to go, as opposed to the what we formerly knew as the Jobs Plus program. That was sort of my little take on it, just to slightly differ with Representative Esquivel's take on the program. Although it may have been successful in his county, I think in many areas it really didn't provide those training opportunities, but essentially just helped employers make their payroll. Thank you.
Thank you.
Additional questions or comments? Vice Chair Hoffman.
Thank you, Chair Witt. Hopefully, as we go through the process of budgeting here over the next several weeks, hopefully we can all figure out the priorities, and in my mind, those priority programs that need to be funded are the ones that have the greatest potential of either saving us money or paying back, on the other hand. And anything that looks like it's giving somebody a fishing pole and teaching them how to fish rather than give them the fish, you know, I would like to see those programs rise to the top, and hopefully they will, and this sounds like it's one of those.
Sure. What if I could comment?
Please, by all means.
Rebecca just reminded me of something that's really critical. One of the things that's behind us coming forward with another training package is in the economic stimulus, the federal economic stimulus package, is a large $7 billion distribution potential for unemployment insurance programs. We have three concepts that we would like to bring in, that we are going to bring in, under that umbrella. And in Oregon, we could ultimately receive as much as $90 million in federal funds that would help us administer these additional programs, at least for a few years, to get them up and going. So there is a bit of a silver lining, or maybe even a little bit more polish on my halo, if I could be a smart person. Yes, we will ask for the authority to spend it, but it is federal money that can really go a long ways to help us out.
Thank you very much. Representative Esquivel.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. Tom, is there any way that we can get a better commitment out of the people involved in this program? And I know that's a tough one to call, because I'm recalling about the people that we had involved when I utilized this program in Josephine County, and two out of the three people, I think I tried it three times, was successful once, which in baseball is pretty decent, one for three. But two of the people, I don't care how you train them, you couldn't get them a job. Is there any way? I mean, I didn't know what to do with them. I was kind of stymied because, you know, not only was it an attitude, but it was I guess you could say lack of training, or just lack of, I don't know. And they didn't seem to have an attitude of that they were really there to work.
Chairman Witt, Representative Esquivel, you raise an excellent point, a truly excellent point. And when we began bringing information forward on this program, you'll start hearing about job skill assessments and checking into work history. And we actually have a sort of a test. It's not an aptitude test, but just sort of a skills test that we are able to run unemployment insurance applicants through now, that assesses their skills and the things that they can do. And there's actually grade levels that these folks, when they come out of this test, have with them. And you'll hear from a lot of our workforce partners on the Workforce Investment Act side, as well as the Employment Services, Business Employment Services, where we're using those tools to better place people and get them in the right opportunity to see that they have the aptitude and the willingness and the fortitude to want to learn and go forward and be successful. Otherwise, they won't be a candidate for the program.
I think Representative Esquivel, this just underscores the importance of having some kinds of job opportunities for young people. I agree with you that offering internships or youth summer youth opportunities or whatever those programs are an opportunity for the prospective employees to learn. To learn about work, to learn what's expected of them, and also for, frankly, for the employers to be able to see whether the prospective employee is the kind of hire that they would like to make. So I think at every opportunity, we need to continue to be finding ways to find this work experience for people, because I've said it before, I'm going to say it again. It's even difficult these days in many instances for kids to even find a summer job mowing lawns. And that's how we build work experience. That's how we begin to build expectations about work. And so I for one, am a complete and total proponent of finding ways to provide that work experience. It's good for the employee. It's good for the employer. Yes, Representative Denborough.
Yes, it sounds like these the new programs that are under consideration would be opt-in programs, right? That is, it would be something that a person would voluntarily enter into as opposed to being sort of forced into, which I think maybe has been the problem with some of the programs in the past. And it seems to me that if it's an opt-in kind of program already, you're going to have somebody who's perhaps on a better path.
Chairman, Representative Denver, that's exactly right. We are going to be advertising and reaching out to people so that and making it so they want to be in the program, not necessarily that, well, yeah, I'm here because I have to or I'm going to lose my unemployment insurance. That doesn't generate a lot of success. It can, but often it doesn't.
Additional questions or comments? I'm not seeing any. Thank you very, very much.
Thanks very much for your time.
Appreciate that. Well, committee members, we received a written comments from J.L. Wilson from AOI, and he acknowledges that there are groups that are working, one being higher calling, with the department, in this instance the employment department, to work on various options that we were discussing earlier with the LC draft. He then goes on and makes a request that the subcommittee, meaning our subcommittee here, be offered an opportunity to take a comprehensive look at these proposals. This is one of the two major groups that are party to the unemployment insurance program, business and labor, and given the importance that business has, I am going to honor this request, not indefinitely, but I think that much of what we do in terms of operating unemployment insurance in this state is based on the input of business and labor. And that there is a trust that has been developed between both of those parties, and that cooperation has led to our unemployment insurance program being the best funded program in the United States, hands down. Because of that, and because one of the key partners has asked that the what was an LC draft and I guess now is a bill, be given an opportunity to be heard before we pass judgment on that. I am going to, for a while, honor that request, and hopefully that legislation will find its way over here in relatively short order. Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I appreciate your comments and your willingness to honor that request. I'm just curious about the timing of getting a program up and running that may take advantage of federal dollars, and hoping that we don't wait so long that we miss that opportunity would be my only concern. I'm sure you're aware of that.
Representative Holdy, that's a very good point. Thank you. And as I say, I'm not going to hold this indefinitely, but at least I would like an opportunity perhaps for the bill to be heard on the Senate side, so that folks know exactly what this bill entails before we make any move here on this side. I think that the fact that we're eliminating one program, we're gonna bring out a new program, merits folks having the opportunity to say, okay, this is in fact what the new program is going to look like. Questions or comments? And is that seem like a fair way to handle that? Okay. With that, I am going to close the public hearing on House Bill 2204. Let's see. Anything for the good of the order at this point? I'm not seeing anything. Kevin, would you give us a brief summary of our work here in the near future and the bills that we intend to be hearing?
Yes, Representative. Chair Witt and members of the committee, I want to give a quick update. First of all, with respect to this bill, I will see if I can get a Senate bill number for each of you as quickly as I can to get up the office so that you can put it on your respective calendars so that this can be tracked and people will know kind of what's going on. As I do understand, I guess the 18th is when this is set for a hearing, but I will confirm that and let each of you know that. Second of all, as far as upcoming bills, I think we've done most of the informational hearings we're going to be doing. There may be ones, in fact, the ACE program is one that is going to be sprinkled in, but we're kind of in the bill section. On Thursday, we will be hearing House Bill 2398, and this concerns some workforce development issues in terms of standards for certain plans and the interplay between local and the state workforce board. We are also going to be hearing 2399, presumably next week sometime. That also modifies the Workforce Investment Board and changes some things up. We have been sent a couple of additional bills from, I guess, the parent committee, as it were. One relating HB 2545 relating to public service collective bargaining, which we will be doing some hearings on. We're going to look at scheduling as to when we can get that heard for testimony, as well as HB 2546, which relates to replacement of striking public employees. So we're now moving into kind of the more substantive time, and I anticipate that there will be additional bills that make their way to the committee. So, again, we will be scheduling those in the next couple of weeks for hearing and moving forward with those public hearings. So,
any discussion on our upcoming bills? Representative Esquivel?
One thing, Mr. Chair, and thank you for indulging me at this point. This, and I'm not sure where to place this thing, but in Hood River, you know, I'm on the Oregon Youth Conservation Corps, and we just had a briefing on what they are doing in the town of Hood River, mm-hmm. and that is with children that come out of the foster care system. At age 18, once you attain that age in the state of Oregon, you're considered an adult, and you hit the bricks. Doesn't matter where you're at. You hit the bricks. You lose all assistance. You lose everything, basically. And what we're working on in that community is to have kind of like a conservation corps where we can send people, work with them for 6 or 8 months, 9 months, and then line them up not only with responsibility of a job, to work them in the community, but also to line them up with the potential employer when they do hit the streets, they are prepared and they are ready. And that we house them, we clothe them, we give them a wage during this period of time. And I was wondering if we want to hear anything, is that fit what we do?
I think, yes, absolutely.
I mean, I think it does.
I think that's
another component of workforce development, and one that if you're interested in, maybe you could work with. Now, is that in your district, Representative Huffman?
Van Orman.
Van Orman. Maybe you could work with. Maybe you could work with Representative Van Orman, and see if that's something that the two of you would jointly like to invite the folks in to describe for us.
Okay, I'll chat with her because it's you know, I've thought about that for quite some time. Of what are we doing with these youths that go through, and some of these young people have been kicked around through the foster care system forever, gone from place to place to place, and then when they're 18, they're basically booted out on the street, and it causes a lot of our homelessness and some real social problems in the long run. So if we can kind of guide those youngsters into something that's, one, is responsible, two, accountable, and three, is a life learning process. Mm-hmm. I think we have some potential there.
I would encourage, as part of that program, to make sure that they have access to one of the Aspire. Is it Aspire or Inspire?
No, Aspire.
Aspire. Yeah, that's what I've done.
Yeah.
I had it right, but I question myself. why do you do this? But, you know, one of the problems is that they have nothing. And often, not everybody. I mean, there are some very loving foster homes that don't necessarily kick them out at 18, but that happens a lot. And they go off of the health plan. If they aspire to college, mm-hmm. or something like that, they have no health coverage, and oftentimes have no. We heard testimony in one of my committees.
It was the education committee.
Oh, okay. Education. They have no idea what benefits there might be out there for them, and so along with this program, if there was an Aspire volunteer that could counsel them on what benefits there are out there for underserved or underprivileged youth, I think that'd be a vital component, because these kids testified to us they're not given anything. They don't know. I mean, not just they're not given benefits, they're not given knowledge about where do I go? What do I do? Am I just under the overpass? Or,
well, it's the old saying is they don't even know what they don't even know.
And, yeah, don't know what to ask. Right.
And if I could just follow up on that, Mr. Chair. We heard testimony about a need for colleges to partner with community agencies to do outreach. There's legislation, I think, to give foster youth tuition waivers at the community colleges. I think that's being proposed.
Sounds right, yeah.
Yeah. But that's just one phase of it. They also need to be encouraged to attend, to actually, you know, as you say, to know what they don't know, what's available for them, and create a pipeline into these programs.
Well, this lady is very remarkable that does this in Hood River. She has done this through all private donations.
Oh.
And she right now has two or three young people that are in this. They got a double-wide trailer, put it on some property, house them, clothe them, work them, teach them responsibilities of getting up to going to work on time and things of this nature. And she's a very remarkable lady.
Mm-hmm. Very interesting.
And she all does it through fundraising.
Representative Colby, you had something.
Yeah, I just wanted to just bring up, I mean, that sounds like a good program and a good thing to look at in that model, and just remind the committee that, you know, besides the Oregon Youth Authority programs and those, we have the Northwest Youth Corps that was here that makes itself available to all youngsters who are interested in going this way. We also have a similar program that the state doesn't really deal with, but the federals do, and we got several of them in Oregon, the U.S. Job Corps. Where I think there's one on the coast by Yahats, there's one at Wolf Creek headed down towards Grants Pass, there's one up by Mount Hood, and I think there's four or five of them in the state where they also serve at-risk youth that have been through some problems, and they have a wide range of skills trainings that they do, everything from culinary to bricklaying to carpentry to everything else. And we haven't really talked about that in this committee, but the Job Corps is another facet that does serve youth. And so we've got a lot of different networks or programs that are in this state, and I don't know that, you know, there's really an overall coordination of those programs to make, you know, people aware of all the different programs that are out there, to work perhaps with community colleges, not just this program, but, you know, I think it might be interesting for the education committee or this committee to really do an inventory of all these different programs that are out there, because a lot of them, I think, just exist without much fanfare or without much knowledge of what they're doing, as Representative Esquivel referred to this one in Hood River. So it would be interesting to see an inventory of all the different programs in the state.
If you'd like, what I can do is follow up with the Employment Department, see if there is perhaps, I mean, there's a website for everything, it seems, nowadays, and it strikes me at least a little bit odd that there wouldn't be some kind of website clearinghouse of this kind of information. So between now and the next hearing, I'll see if we can find a little something online and forward on to you guys.
And you may want to also check with the Workforce Investment Board, too. I think they would be a good source, Representative Huffman.
I was just going to say, it reminded me, as we work on mycareerpath.com and .org on OWIB, it's a good reminder to make sure that on that website we've got links to all of these different youth, because the website will target 17 to 24 is kind of the core target area. And so, and we had actually talked the last board meeting. I brought up that maybe that should be 15. So, but it's a hot, up to date website that really draws in youth oriented, and kind of gives them a clue about what there is available out there. And then hopefully we'll have the marketing component to actually get kids clued in that this is a website. But that's a great point. That'd be a, as much as we're hoping to get that off the ground and market that, it'd be a great clearinghouse for these youth programs.
Yeah, because you have apprenticeship programs, pre-apprenticeship programs, all sorts of different programs that are out there, and I just don't think our school systems are really aware of all the different programs that are out there and available for youth in different circumstances, for sure.
Well, I will commit to bringing that to OWIB and making sure that...
Wonderful. This is tremendous. I think a great service, too, to school guidance counselors and the like.
The other thing that, that I'm seeing is that when we all grew up in the old days, that we could go to work doing something when we were about 12, 13, 14, you know. Mm-hmm. But I'm going to give you an example of the way we do things. We had a great program in Southern Oregon. It was Rogue Valley Community Development or something of that nature. And what we did is we got all the high school kids together that were at risk, and we would purchase homes and have a contractor oversee these homes, and they would renovate these homes and sell them. By the time we were finished with this as a government, no kids could work on the project. And that's a shame, because of regulations, mm-hmm. of insurance, of this, of that. And it finally got to the point where that program went away. But it was very, very interesting to watch these kids, because, first of all, one, they attended. Two, they were enthusiastic. Three, they were learning math skills. Four, they were learning that you have to comply with codes in order to do something. So they were learning responsibility and discipline, that you have to do it a certain way. But more importantly, they were learning teamwork. And yet that program went away when we got involved in it. It's too bad. And that's the kind of things that we need in this society, is to help our youth to learn how to work.
And perhaps one of the most valuable things that we can do is help remove some of those barriers to opportunities. Vice Chair Huffman.
I was sitting in a committee meeting this past week, hoping that the local economy doesn't crush this program that just got started last year in the Dalles at North Wasco County, District 21. But there's a fairly young educator that came in there, Brian, and he started a home building program, which is not a new concept, but it's, as you mentioned, it's a concept that has definitely fallen on the skids in the last 20 years. Where I grew up, it was a program that was alive and well when I was going to school there. But what they have done is tied in with one of the local general contractors, home builders, and he has committed to 2 years and two homes, donating his time, expertise, and ability. And last year, the first home, which I think they successfully sold, and they're working on their second home this year, they had 35 youth, and I met a lot of them at the open house. And these are youth that were not engaged in other programs, and they were at risk of being lost.
Yep.
And I'll tell you, the excitement on those kids, I mean, they were so excited to open up their house to the community to show them what they had done.
Called pride of workmanship.
They were proud. They learned how to read a tape measure. They learned how to do things that I take for granted, you know, because my dad taught me 50 years ago. But these kids got in there and learned, and so they're touching probably several of those and have added on some that replaced those that graduated last year. And if we could emulate those programs throughout the state, we would end up after a few years having thousands of kids that could come out and work with their hands and understand what it's like to show up to work on time. And
that was exactly the experience that I had. I know I mentioned it when the carpenters were in, that I had attended the graduation ceremony that they had just in Maryland and had drawn at-risk youth from inner city and metropolitan area Washington, D.C. And these kids really had no opportunity to ever even hope to probably achieve a middle-class income or living standards. And the pride that they had at that graduation ceremony, I mean, the greatest thing I'd ever seen. And it was every bit as remarkable as a college graduation. The parents were so proud of what their kids had achieved, and never thought that they would ever have that opportunity, simply because somebody provided them that, and now they not only have a career and a career path, but the pride was overwhelming from both the apprentices as well as their families. It was absolutely incredible. And John, I know what you're talking about, and we need to make these opportunities available to these kids.
And financially, one of the neat things, Brian went out and actually got two separate grants from State Farm Insurance. And I was kind of surprised. Somehow he had identified that State Farm had a program that was interested in engaging youth. And I think that the monies for the pilot program totaled around $130,000 or something. It was enough to completely cover the lot and the materials for the first home. So the first home was free and clear.
Wow.
And
wow.
You know, hopefully they sold it for enough to get the seed money for the second home.
So. Tremendous. Representative Dunbar, did you have something?
I do. Actually, this is a shift in topic, but since we're talking about perhaps, you know, potential information sessions for the future, you and I have talked about this offline, the question of veterans and where veterans fit into the workforce. And we have a lot of veterans who are coming back now, and, you know, many of them are going into school, but a lot of them aren't. And there's I think a huge resource for us, as well as, you know, potentially a huge problem, you know, if we can't find meaningful employment for them. But many of them have developed strong work ethics during their time in the military, and many of them substantial skills. And the question becomes, how do we How do we make those, how do we transition them from that skill set into something, you know, that could lead to meaningful, ongoing, sustainable employment? And I don't know if this is being touched on at all in the Veterans Committee, but, you know, I think it is very appropriate for this committee.
And Representative Imbrough, what we found out was what was startling to me, that they had job fairs and things for returning veterans, but the veterans themselves wouldn't take the jobs at that time. And I know that it's kind of like, well, what do you mean? And I use this analogy because this is the truth. When you're holding an M16 in one hand and 3 days later you're out on the street, you have to have some kind of a transitional period that we're not allowing for. Mm-hmm. And you're not willing to make a decision at that point. You don't even know what you want to do or where you want to go at that point. And you need to have some what I call wind down time in order to adjust to your environment, because you've come out of a extremely violent environment, one that's stressful, one that you're not with your family, and all of a sudden you're with your family, and some of these people that are coming in today won't even talk to other people because they're afraid they might pick up on something and hold them back from their family. Mm-hmm. So, and understand those issues, but we're working on a program to give them some what I call wind down time, because right now we have an extremely large amount of problems with our veterans that are returning. And what was interesting was that fair where they had a large number of employers at that fair, and these were just returning veterans, and they talked to a lot of veterans, and at the end of the thing they got, at the end of the function, they got all the employers together and said, well, how many did you hire? Well, no one had hired anyone because they wouldn't accept the job, because at that point they weren't ready to make a commitment on what they wanted to do. So we are working on that, and we have hit on that because the unemployment rate is very high among our veterans, and they kind of get lost in the shuffle once they do their duty. Okay, here's the street, there you go, carry on with life. Well, you can't really carry on with life, because not only have you changed as a veteran, but your family has changed without you. And there's a large time that you need to have an adjustment period, and we're finding that out. So we are working on that, Representative, and hopefully we'll come to some conclusions with getting the federal government to step in, step up to the plate, and do what they need to do and do what's right with our veterans.
With our National Guard veterans.
That's what I mean.
That are.
Well, to me, a veteran's a veteran. I don't care if it's the National Guard or whatever, but they have a different set of rules, and that's bothers me.
And that's the point. Yeah. No, you're right. Yeah. A veteran's a veteran, but they're not always recognized. National Guard, all of a sudden, well, you're out.
Yeah. I know. Yeah. No, but we are working on that, because to me, I don't, you know, if you serve an example, I mean, I couldn't believe it, but the state of Oregon charges our veterans when they're in a combat zone personal income tax. Federal doesn't. State of Oregon does. So I have a bill to stop that. But I mean, that's the kind of things that these details. But just because they're National Guard, that doesn't mean anything. They're still a soldier. They're still in a combat zone. They're still going through the same thing as a regular Army person. Well, I mean, what's the difference? So.
Right.
Anyway, we're working on that.
Thank you, Representative Escobar.
But again, if I could just follow up, you know, I'm really interested in the workforce piece of it, and you know, perhaps how the training can translate into getting some credit in an apprenticeship program, for example. You know, those kinds of partnerships, it seems, are, you know, are really vital. If the trades are looking for, you know, good quality candidates, and here potentially you might have people who could come in with the experience to, you know, jump a year or two even. I don't know. I'm not an expert in this area.
Well, and at a minimum, Representative Holby has been very patient. I mean,
thank you.
You're next, Representative Holby. But
Representative Dimbro just led me right into this. I have a son that's a veteran, or not a veteran. He's still in the Army, but and the National Guard needs to be addressed too. But you know, so much of the opportunities for you know, everybody is based on our economy for sure, and so it's difficult to provide opportunities without a an economy that seems to be growing. But the trades, for example, have had for many years a program that's called Helmets to Hard Hats. And, you know, I know that Chair Witt's heard of it before, and I've heard Bob Shipwreck speak of it, and almost all of the trade, the union trade programs have that program, which provides a direct entry for veterans into their apprenticeship programs. Not a very well-known fact, but, you know, the trades have been doing this for years, of trying to provide those opportunities for veterans. It's a great model, you know. It's a great model. Others should do it, too, because there's a lot of other industries that could benefit from the training that our veterans have coming out of the service. And it's been relatively successful. For the trades, they get great tradespeople out of the military.
Well, this has been a tremendous discussion here.
So, again, there's another program that needs to be on our inventory list.
It's true, Representative Holby. Your suggestion, I think, would be one of the best services maybe that we could do. At least for those who. I don't know whether they still call them guidance counselors in the school system or not, but what I used to call a guidance counselor, a service to them. And I'm thinking that along with all of these youth programs, Kevin, maybe we could inquire with the Education Committee to see if they'd like to do a joint hearing. That may be of value as much, I'm sure, to them as it would be to us. It might necessitate. I'm not sure what time of day the Education Committee meets.
It meets 1 o'clock. Monday, Wednesday.
It may. If we were to do that, it might necessitate an evening hearing. But I'm certainly willing to do that, and I think that there would be a lot to be gained with that. And then with all of the veterans issues. Maybe we could think about holding a joint hearing with the Veterans Committee as well. And I know that my LA, Irv Fletcher, is now head of the Veterans Advisory Group for the state of Oregon, and I'm sure that could link us up probably with anybody that we would like to bring in here for testimony. So. That seems like a natural too. So, these are tremendous ideas, and it looks like we're going to need probably at least two more informational sessions slotted in somewhere here with our bills, and also scheduling becomes a little more complicated, Kevin. Because if we can, I'd like to hold combined committee hearings.
I believe that Representative Dembro is the vice chair of the Education Committee. Is that correct? Maybe I work with you as far as coordinating. Are you? You're on the Veterans.
Yes.
Maybe see if we can get something. Are you vice chair as well?
No, that's Representative Freeman is vice chair, and Representative Cowan, I believe, is chair, and she would be the one I think we'd want to gravitate toward.
Okay.
But, I mean, that's a good idea, Mr. Chair.
Very good. And I'm hearing, Kevin, right down the line that each of us has perhaps some programs that we would like to have, you know, at least invited here. So if you'll work with the committee members on that, tremendous discussion. Anything further? Those of you who are listening from the public will see why this committee is so exciting and why it's a privilege to be able to serve on it. I absolutely love the discussions that we have. And Thursday we're going to be doing our first committee bill.
2398 is set for Thursday, yes.
Okay, and just a reminder again, we're going to have to do some filtering here because when our committee initially made its recommendations, since that time there have been changes that the governor's office has achieved, and so we're going to have to take a look at what we recommended, what may have already been done,
what is going to be done here in the near future, and then what falls out is after that, and see then again what our committee wants to move forward with. Okay. With that, we stand adjourned until Thursday. Thank you very much. This was an excellent discussion.